Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.
All right, here we are, Airheads. It's time once again for another rendition of Putting On Airs back in the virtual Airstream studios. I'm Chi, and that's Corey. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right.
We had a large weekend. I wanted to say, first off, thanks to everyone who came out to the shows in Asheville and Knoxville this weekend. When I feel as empty as I do today on a Thursday, I know that it was a great weekend and we left it all on the field, and it was cool meeting everybody. We haven't really toured a lot together really since this show. And so it's cool being somewhere and having people come up to us and saying that they found out about us through Putting On Airs. That's a new experience. It's usually, you know, in our experience, it was like, oh yeah, people liked us and then they came to Putting On Airs, but that's really cool. So we really appreciate y'all spreading the word.
Yeah, that does hit. That is nifty. You meet somebody, they say they're, you know, an airhead or whatever, and then find out that was the first thing that they found from us. It's always fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
So this episode is going to be a little bit different for me. Listen, I've been telling y'all for weeks, and I'm not saying that I'll never revisit the Venn diagram. I'm sure I will as inspiration strikes, but I've been warning y'all for a long time. Like, I'm fixing to run out of this shit. And you may have noticed in recent weeks, I've been on and off with it. I've been venturing into other topics. Well, so this week it's a similar thing. I'm just going to talk about basically the craziest, I'm not going to say they're the craziest, but some of the craziest bosses or CEOs that I could find. No Venn diagram, no overlap. I've just been watching Succession, you know, and fantastic show. And it made me want to look up, like, you know, and also like Silicon Valley. I just watched The Social Network again, rewatched it. You've seen that movie, right? The Social Network?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure, dude. That was Sorkin, right?
Yeah, well, he wrote it. It was directed by David Fincher. Fincher, yeah. Also super hits.
A good combo.
An incredible combo. And, yeah, I rewatched it on a plane. And that movie is wild. I didn't intend to talk about that movie.
That's fine. Let's do it.
That is one of the reasons that I started looking into CEOs, was because I watched that movie. It's all about Mark Zuckerberg and everything. That movie, and I remember thinking this when I first watched it, like, Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher, I guess both combined especially, are truly something else, because there's no reason that that movie, being what it's about, should be so insanely, like, compelling and
I agree,
enrapturing the whole time. Like, that movie sucks you in from the very first moment and just, like, holds your attention, like you're completely engaged the whole time. And it's a legal dispute between, you know, like a bunch of pieces of shit. Yeah. Harvard types over a social media company. You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't But it feels like a high stakes fucking thrill. I mean, the stakes were pretty high in terms of money, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, for people that we shouldn't care about. Movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Like when the movie first came out, when I just first saw like there's a movie about the Facebook, you know, legal drama, I didn't give a shit even right. a little bit. I didn't even read anything about it to try to go, well, maybe that I was like, I don't care. Yeah, I understand why they're going to put it out. Facebook is a very popular topic, whatever. I'll be honest, finding out Jesse Eisenberg was in, I was like, okay, I'm a little more on board because he's a great actor. But at the same time, I don't think I care. And because I didn't know at first that it was written by Sorkin. And then when I found that out, I was like, well, okay, I sure do like quippy dialogue. So I could,
We should maybe talk about Aaron Sorkin on this show. I mean,
please.
I guess we can talk a little bit about him right now. Cause I mean, he definitely seems to fit. Aaron Sorkin is like I fucking love Aaron Sorkin.
Me too.
I'm a massive Aaron Sorkin fan while also acknowledging that he's one of the most Raven people on planet Earth, which we haven't talked about. We haven't really talked about Ravenry on
the
show,
etymology of Ravenry.
Talked about it tons on Well Read and stuff. It's a long-standing thing with us, but it basically just, I don't know, how would you describe someone who's Raven or something? It's just super, it's very typical, right?
Very on the nose
for either the person or the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, it's just like, it obviously came from That's So Right. And I never watched that show, but I assumed that was like sort of a catchphrase for whenever Raven was doing something very Raven.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, we just started like, and by the way, if you're out there, I don't know what's going on with my camera. It's flickering, but I certainly can't fix it. So I apologize. But yeah, so we would like, you know, just within the group, let's say, for instance, if I was to wake up to a string of text and say to the group, hey guys, I'm sorry I haven't responded. I got drunk last night and fell asleep eating a double cheeseburger. The response would be, my God, that's so Raven. Because that is behavior typically ascribed to me. Yeah.
Right. Well, so in terms of Aaron Sorkin, it just means he's like an extremely pretentious, up his own butt, artiste-ass motherfucker, basically.
Like the stereotype of it.
Yeah, right. Like, but again, at the end of the day, I don't even care because he hits so hard for me because he really is like that, you know. It's weird to channel Kid Rock while discussing Aaron Sorkin, but in the words of Kid Rock, it ain't bragging, motherfucker, if you back it up, right?
Yep.
So he's real, real good. But like, you know, a lot of his stuff, like for example, The Newsroom, right?
Yeah.
Like that show got roasted by a lot of people, and it's still like it because it was just people being like, okay, Sorkin is about to jump the shark with this one, like this is a bit too much, right? And I still really loved that show while also thinking that all those people were, you know, pretty right or pretty well founded. He made that Netflix movie about the Chicago Six or Eight, Seven. Set whatever city plus number. There's a ton of those.
That
right?
ending and scene, it runs, brother.
I know. That's what I was about to say. And that's a good movie. I enjoyed it. It's got a good cast, everything. But the last scene of that movie is
unbelievable.
The most, like, just again, the most Raven shit of all time. Like for Aaron Sorkin.
I think a critique of Aaron Sorkin I would give is that he often writes the way he wants it to be instead of the way that it actually is.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And like a criticism that I've heard from people who don't, because I've been very vocal over the years about how I like Aaron Sorkin. We've actually lost a fan over it because they got in my DMs and they were like, hey, just so you know, Aaron Sorkin is not a good writer at all. And I said, hey, you know, art's subjective, but like, he might not be your favorite, but to say he's not good is kind of stupid. And they were like, no, he's literally not even good, and I'll prove it to you. And they tried to send me a Zoom link so that they could get me on face-to-face and convince me that. And I said, hey, it's okay. It's just my opinion. I dig the guy's stuff, and you don't. That's no big problem. They're like, no, you're not hearing me out. I can explain to you how he's not even good. And I was like, yo, if I like everything he's ever done, you're not going to convince me that I was wrong in liking it, right? But
go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say one criticism that I have heard from people that even though I love Sorkin, I definitely agree with, is that especially if you watch The West Wing, like every single character, if you know anything about Aaron Sorkin, is just him, like all of them, every single one of them. The president is him. Fucking Rob Lowe was him. All like they all have. There's not really much. The only difference between some of these characters is one of them's older, one of them's younger, and one of them's a woman. But they fucking say the same thing.
Absolutely. They're all like verbal snipers who never miss, you know, never miss with a quip or a rejoinder or whatever. Like none of them have, you know, none of them take showers later that day and think like, oh, fuck, I should have said that. Like they all say exactly what they should have said in every single moment. And it's like, and it's rapid fire, and they do it back and forth to each other. Nobody
which
misses
is great. Beat.
There's no pause. There's no hesitation. That's what I was about to say. And it's like, so a lot of people are like, this is fucking ridiculous. Literally nobody talks like this. But I've always been, as far as that goes, I've always just been like, right, but it would hit if people did.
They did.
And this is a movie, so
yeah.
That hits for me. It's like people don't talk the way they talk in Quentin Tarantino movies either. You
of
know
course
what I mean?
Not.
Generally, but it hits.
It's entertaining.
So who cares? And that's how I've always felt about Aaron Sorkin's like style. And also like he broke onto the scene, as I understand it, with A Few Good Men, which was a play first and then turned into a movie. And that might be a top five movie all time for me. That's one of my absolute favorite movies. I'm a huge Rob Reiner fan because of that movie and Stand
One
by
of the
me
most
combined.
Underrated directors of all time.
Right, because his versatility is insane.
And like, all of them are fucking legendary. Like, dude, when Harry Met Sally, Spinal Tap, and A Few Good Men, three
Stand by
complete,
Me, too. Stand by me is
four
also
completely
different,
different movies. And they're all, like, the guy only does the thing. What was that one dude who, like, he only acted in five things, but every single one of them was nominated for an Academy Award?
I may have his name wrong, but I think it's John K. Zal.
He's Cazale. One of them types.
He was in The Godfather, The Deer Hunter, Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon, and maybe one. And I might have some of those wrong, too. Maybe it's Godfather 2, and then the three other things. That's the only things he ever did. But will you tell, if you can remember it, and if you can't, I'll tell the version of it that I remember, the way I remember it, that Aaron Sorkin story that you shared with me about him writing a particular scene involving an opposing viewpoint or whatever. I'm talking about?
I remember what you're talking about, but there's a lot of water under the bridge since then, or like a lot of time has passed, and you know my retention is bad, but it was the one that I learned when I took... And I'm sorry how this is going to sound. When I took Aaron Sorkin's masterclass. No, go ahead and tell it.
The way I remember it was, and I don't remember what movie or project it was in or whatever. It might have been The Newsroom or something with some politics in it, which is a whole lot of his shit. So that doesn't narrow it down. So, but you said that he said that he had to write this character giving a, this like screed, representing a viewpoint that he himself vehemently disagreed with, right?
Yeah.
And the way he put it was something like, I never could understand how a human being could possibly hold that opinion on that subject until I wrote it.
And by the way,
then it clicked.
By the way, In there, in what he's saying, as raven as it is, there is something profound to it. Sincerely, there is something profound to it. Sincerely, and now I'm about to be Aaron Sorkinish. But one time, right after we'd first gone on tour, I had to a fan of ours who also happened to teach at one of our local high schools wanted me to come speak to his class. I just said yes without asking any questions whatsoever. Well, I get there and I figured I'm going to speak about comedy or whatever. And I've got it in my mind. I'm like, just do the opposite of Jim Carrey in the Harvard speech. You know what I mean? Tell these kids that they need to have a backup plan, all this shit.
Yeah.
And I get there and 5 minutes before the class, he goes, all right, well, you know, it's an hour and a half. So whatever you want to do. And I was like, what? And he was yeah, you're going to do the class today. And I was like, okay. What's the class? He's like, well, we do, we, you know, it's like we do, what's it, social, current issue. Part of it is current issues, and part of it is blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so I had like 2 seconds to figure out what we were going to do. So I decided, I was like, all right, we're going to do a debate. I'm going to talk to everybody, and we're going to do a debate, and we're going to have teams, and I'm just going to have this be debate class because then they'll do most everything. And so I had people, I had the kids, high school kids, get up and debate each other, but I told them, whatever, I said, you have to take the opposite stance of what you believe. You know what I mean? I was like, take the opposite stance of what you believe, because I'm just trying to be creative. And like, it was very fucking interesting watching someone who didn't believe a thing make all the points, and like, you could, their realization of like, oh wow, I could I could see that, like, now that I'm arguing it, you know, from my point of view. However, Aaron Sorkin basically being like, I can unlock the secrets to communication, you know, through my fucking writing is...
By writing, yeah.
But I do get what he's saying, but goddamn, dude, it's so Raven.
But when you told me, he said, I never understood anyone could have that opinion on that subject until I wrote it. I was like, you know what? I actually feel exactly that same way about carrot cake, because I was never... And it's honestly not even a joke. It's true. It's like, I was never a big carrot cake fan, but like, the family wanted a carrot cake and I'd be baking and stuff. So I made a carrot cake. And after I made a carrot cake, I was like, carrot cake is fire.
Yeah.
I love this shit.
No, so I feel you on that. I did. He had a lot of good things in there, though. I mean, obviously his masterclass was mainly him crawling up his own butt. But I mean, you get what you sign up for. But like, the one thing I took away from it that like really, really helped me was he was talking about, he's like, if you're a writer and you feel you don't write enough, he's like, you're probably okay. Because he goes, writing to me is 10% writing and 90% thinking about the shit that you're going to write about,
of course. You know?
And I was easily. Like, okay, I was like, okay, that makes me feel better. And then he was just talking about like, when he's stuck, he would just go take a shower. And of course, he used the example of like, because that's what Einstein did, you know, so naturally I do that. And it does work. But if you want to see a man who thinks very highly of himself, but as you said, Trey, can back it up, I suggest you take Aaron Sorkin's masterclass.
I know that a lot of the critiques of him, also, you can find all these YouTube videos and stuff that point out how often he has reused the same tropes and jokes and basically lines. He'll barely alter a line and use it again. But it's like... I tell you what, like, I've made at this point hundreds of YouTube videos, right? Mm-hmm. And I try to write jokes for all of them. And at first I was like, I would think of something. I'd be like, it's kind of similar to that joke I made about that other thing in that other video. But like, politics in this country is like a cycle and all this shit.
Of course.
The same subjects keep coming up. And at a certain point, I just stopped giving a shit about that. And I'll recycle material all the time, because, you know, you got to feed the beast or whatever. So he's just
doing the same thing,
grander scale than me. So
the other day
the
other day I was getting ready to write something for my Substack over at parttimefunnyman.com. And I got 2 paragraphs in, and then it clicked with me. And I went back to my archives and realized I had written basically word for word the exact same thing in October. You know what I mean? Like, you just forget all that shit. But yeah, dude, if you're Sorkin's pretty prolific. I mean, he's writing shit all the time. Like, the human brain only possesses so many, I won't say jokes, but so many joke mechanisms. Uh-huh. And when you use the same joke mechanisms, it can make a joke that is technically different from this joke sound exactly the same, because you got there using the same paddle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I wanted to show you, there was one other thing I wanted to show you, and then I guess I'll start talking about some crazy bosses and shit. Let me see if I can pull this up.
We're so good at the computers.
Do you see that?
Not yet. Really? Yes, I do. Okay. I do now. The girl from a very poor family has been picked as a luxury brand's model, as they liked,
they
her,
liked her attitude and smile. So this is a feel-good post, right? I don't know what that, this is probably in India or Pakistan, somewhere like that. I hope that's not racist.
You said probably.
Yeah, right.
Probably so, is.
And then, we don't even need the audio. I'm trying to get copyright flagged or nothing.
Yeah, right.
But it's just this this very pretty young girl walking down the streets, and it reportedly she's from like a peasant family, and she goes to this high-end luxury brand's store. In the store, they've used her as like the model for a lot of their
their items or lines of items. There she is pitching some makeup and stuff. So it's like a luxury makeup brand for young girls. And they picked this girl off the streets from abject poverty to be the spokesperson. And it ends with a little inspirational quote, make your dreams matter, right? Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. That whole thing is sweet, right?
Yeah.
Buddy, you talk about Raven. The comments of that post, which I believe to be true, are so insanely Raven of both the internet and also capitalism.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because immediately, all you watch that, you almost start to tear up or whatever. You're like, oh, that's so sweet. There's some good in the world. You go to the comments, and all of the top comments are outlining, like, just so you guys know, they paid this girl a pittance and now have the right to use her her image in perpetuity forever, and she gets peanuts for it, and she's still going to die in poverty, and she got fucked over, and she doesn't have the money for lawyers and all this stuff, and like, and it's just the internet.
To be fair, that's where my head went to, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Right. Well, apparently it is, but yeah, but it's like, so, and it's fine. I'm not laughing in her situation.
No,
again,
me
it's
either.
Just the ravenry of the fucking, like, nothing ever hits. Like, when it comes to any kind of capitalist, anything like that, that ever comes up, you know, it's some bullshit behind the curtain, but also the internet just rushes to ruin everything. In this case, like, appropriately so.
Sure.
But also, like, you know, the internet, there'll be, you know, you cannot enjoy a gif of a fat fuck cat being fat and goofy, because everybody on the internet would be like, I hope you know that's animal abuse. That cat definitely has, you know, cat fibromyalgia or whatever. It is certainly, you can tell by looking at, you see the way it moves its tail, it's super depressed and it has diabetes and it's going to die. And it's always some shit like that.
We don't live in a time where people allow two things to be true anymore. I've found like two things can be true. That cat is being abused, but it looks really, really funny sitting there with a piece of cheese on its head. You know what I mean? Like, that's just true. Like, I thought a lot of the subreddits.
Do you think having a pet that gets big and fat, like, do you qualify that as animal abuse?
It depends. It depends on, like, how fat. It really does depend on how fat. Because, like, you know, not all dogs will do this, but most dogs will, quote unquote, founder themselves. If you keep giving them food, they will keep eating it. And I saw a dog one time at Target, and it was like, it was the biggest, Trey, it was a weenie dog. It was a fucking weenie dog, and it weighed at least 125 pounds. I'm not kidding.
It's a big,
like,
weenie dog.
His, and this woman had him up in a cart, and we were just like, oh, buddy. And she immediately, because here's the thing. If someone has adopted or rescued a dog, you don't have to ask them. They'll fucking tell you. And she immediately, as soon as we looked over at it, she launched into this whole thing of how, you know, his former owner made him be this way, and then they died, and now I've got him on a diet trying to get him back to normal or whatever. But, like, so this dog couldn't even walk, because if you put him on the ground, his belly was longer than his arms. Like, he would just, so, like, yeah, I do think that is when you get into that range. But if you just got kind of a chunky dog, no, they're hitting, they love it.
But do you think, what do you think about the motivation behind it? Because, like, let me use this as an analogy, right? Pretty much every meemaw on planet Earth, right?
Yeah.
It's a known thing. You go over to a meemaw's house, and this goes from Italian nanas to fucking Russian bubbas to, you know, southern meemaws.
I don't know about the Chinese meemaws, though.
No, they call you fat, I reckon. But, but the rest of them, you go over to meemaw's house, she's going to be shoving food in your face the whole time. Ah, you're going to dry up and blow away. You know, fucking, you need to eat something. You got to eat something. Here, eat this. You know, and it's a stereotype, and it's like a loving stereotype. Like, nobody hates on Meemaw for doing it. It's like, that's just what Meemaw does, and everybody knows it. But, like, you know, that includes the Meemaws of big fat fuck diabetic motherfuckers who don't need to be eating shit. You know what I mean? But Meemaw going Meemaw. Like, so, what if you just got, like, a meemaw-ass pet owner who's like, oh, my baby loves his sausages, you know, and she just then, like, you know, She's just like, but he likes it.
He likes it.
But he's dying.
Yeah, right. It's like,
he's fine. Hell, he'll be fine. Like,
passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It feels pretty fucking different to me.
Like
locking a pit bull in a cage behind a junkyard until it rots away or whatever.
It is.
You know?
I think that there is such a thing as it's different. I do think there's such a thing as like unconscious abuse. You know what I mean? And like, it's where like you are technically hurting this thing, but in your brain you're not because you're being loving. Okay. So like, I think that doing that to your kid is way different than beating your kid. Like, there's scales, you know, but two things can be true. Like, if you've got a kid, once your kid gets in his teens or whatever, he can make his own. He knows, hey, I should run or I should, now, you know. But if you've got a fucking 200-pound five-year-old,
I brought up Meemaws for a reason. Like, I'm saying Meemaws do that and people don't get on them. I think parent... If you're a parent and you got a big fat fuck kid, it is your fault. I have kids and I worry about
it's your
being
fault.
Fat and I watch what I feed them and all this shit. But I also was a fat kid. I've struggled with my weight my whole life. A lot of times you see fat fuck kids, they got fat fuck parents. And so it's like, you know,
you'll have that.
I'm not saying that makes
it's up
okay,
to us as
like
parents.
They're not doing it. They're not applying it to themselves. Of course, they're not going to apply it to their kid or whatever. I think it's their fault. But I don't think that it's the same as like abuse. You know,
Of course not. Like I would, dude, if I don't know what the situation would be, but if someone was like, yeah, your kid's going to be way overfed or we're going to fucking punch him in the mouth every time he's happy, I'd be like, all right, let the fat fuck eat, you know. But like, you know, I think there's just like, okay. It'd be the same thing as like, you know, verbal abuse versus physical abuse. Like one is definitely, you'd rather have that. Like I think most women would rather be screamed at. Goddamn. But it doesn't make that thing right. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of in that whataboutism range, but like it does, like, you know, as parents, it's our job to teach our kids that, hey, whatever works at Mamaw's house don't work in the real life, but enjoy it while you're over there. Cause dude, my fucking Mamaw, and I know yours is the same. She was the queen of this shit. When I was at my fattest, which is 50 pounds heavier than I am right now. And right now I'm not doing good. You know, like I would go over to my granny's and I would be so depressed about my weight and I'd be trying to do good. And she'd constantly be just trying to shove stuff in me. And I'd be like, Granny, I'm a fucking cow. And she'd be like, you ain't. You're a growing boy. I'm 27. I was a growing boy at 27.
Of course.
And we've talked about this before, certainly not on this podcast. And maybe the mammals of dogs feel this way too. But like because Granny did it to her fucking dog. Like all her
I feel like a lot of fat fuck dog or pets.
It's mammals.
There's mammals there.
Yes. And are they trying to do something bad? No, they're loving you to death. It's right. like the
yes,
it's like
exactly.
fucking Chris Farley squeezing that role in or in yeah. In Tommy Boy. But like she in her mind though, because things are so much different now. She was born in 1920, which means she lived through the Depression. And back then, societally, and this is actually a decent topic for this show, I don't know that we've ever covered, but back then, societally, being fat and pale meant that you were wealthy. Whereas nowadays, being skinny and tan often means that you're wealthy. You know what I mean? So she looked yeah. at my fat ass and was like, women are going to love you. And meanwhile, mm-hmm. I'm sitting there with my receding hairline just going, no, they're not. And I have so much proof.
Yeah. Didn't you, Brink, talking about fat fuck dogs and stuff reminded me, and just fat fucks in general. You had like some whale stuff or something?
Yes. Yes. So I don't know if you've heard, but like there's been a significant increase since 2020 yeah. of orcas.
Yeah, the whales are fighting back. Right?
They're fighting boats and stuff like that, yeah. right? And
good
I thought
them.
This happened. This got.
I think
put
they
out.
Finally saw Blackfish somehow. I don't know how. Did you ever see that documentary, Blackfish?
No,
so, well, they got it on Orca Netflix recently.
Wetflix.
And they were like, yeah, Wetflix, and they were like, this will not stand.
Yeah.
I don't know. They can like communicate and shit, right? Maybe they found out what's been going down and they're like, fuck these motherfuckers.
Well,
I don't know.
Let me set it up and then I will pose you the theory from biologist Alfredo Lopez Fernandez, which is a fucking wonderful yep. name. Alfredo yes, Lopez Fernandez. If that motherfucker's yeah. mama can't cook, then this yeah. there's nothing wrong right with this world. So since 2020, there's been like a huge spike in it. And so I heard about this like a week ago, right? And then 2 days ago, I saw it again. I was like, oh, yeah, I've already read this article. But turns out it was a completely different article because it happened again, right? And I was like, I got to talk about this on the show. So today, I fucking type it in again. And there was an article from 1 day ago. And I was like, okay. And it was a different one. And then as I go back to the Google search, there's one from 8 minutes ago. And I was like, are they just repeating this shit? No, completely separate one that happened in Spain, right? So orcas are just ramming ships. They're just like you said, they're clearly communicating with each other and doing it. And Mr. Alfredo, man, his uh-huh. theory, and he suggests that this all stems from there was in like 2019 or something, there was this boat that drilled this orca whale, and the whale didn't die, but it was very badly injured. And so this orca apparently regains its strength and then is like, all right, it's time. Like John Wick shit. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
this orca starts attacking these fucking boats every time they see it. And this orca has babies, and they see this behavior much like the monkeys in the experiment who were beating the shit out of all the monkeys that were climbing the ladder to get to the banana. You remember that thing?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. I'm glad. So they did this experiment with monkeys ultimately to prove that so many things that we do in society are just because that's the way it's done. And we have no idea fucking why we do it. So they had all these monkeys in this cage, right? And then they put a ladder up to the top, and on the top they had a banana. So naturally a monkey would try to climb that, and every time they would climb to the top of it, they would spray this monkey with a fucking fire hose and start spraying all the other fucking monkeys with it, right? Well, they slowly yeah. start replacing monkeys.
Science is wild.
They slowly start replacing monkeys one at a time so that one of the monkeys never saw any of this happening, right? Well, eventually they stopped spraying the monkeys, but anytime any of the monkeys would get next to the ladder, all of the monkeys would beat the fuck out of this monkey, right?
Yeah, right.
Because some of them remember, like, they know what's going to happen.
Like, no, don't do that. That's,
well,
yeah.
By the end of this trial, they had 50 monkeys in there, and they were all still doing it, but not one of those monkeys had ever been in there when the water was actually sprayed. All they knew was, if you get next to that ladder, we beat the fuck out of you. So it's signaling to them that's like, there's things that we do that if we would just stop for a second and go, wait, why? We would realize there's no explanation and it's stupid. At one point, maybe it did, but now it's not. So point is, all these baby orcas have grown up seeing their mom and all these people fucking ram ships. Now, at a certain point, they're not going to know that the reason we do this is because mommy was attacked, because like it's just like all this it's just their behavior changing because they're seeing now, hey, you see a ship, you fuck it up. And yeah. Over a couple of years and more breeding, it's now like this entire group of orcas, and then any orca baby that swims up and sees them knows, sea ship, fuck it up. So that ship may have created an irreversible evolutionary change in whales that now we're about to get our comeuppance for, as you said, blackfish.
Well, you know, I mean, they ain't never called them friendly whales. You know, I wanted to make that joke, and they are like fucking ruthless hunters and killers, and they do coordinate to, I've seen some wild videos about how they'll like a seal will think it's escaped an orca because it gets on an ice floe or something.
Yeah.
And the orca will go get like three of its boys, and they'll make like a fucking wave pool that
right
like tilts the ice floe over and then eat the fuck out of that seal or whatever. They're obviously real smart. They was homies with humans for a long time.
Right.
Humans betrayed that trust.
Yes.
So now this seems evolutionarily appropriate.
Yeah. And that like goes against all our talk, because the first behavior of it wasn't instinctual. It was never the instinct of a whale to see a boat and mm-mm. smash it. Right. But now it is slowly becoming the instinct of a whale to do that because they've seen it done so many times.
I hate to say this, but like, I think I'm all for that.
Oh, I'm for it.
Except knowing us and how we be,
mm-hmm.
it may result in them fucking around and finding out. Like, I'm not sure that they won't. I'm not sure that orcas want that smoke at the end of the day.
Like, no.
I love them ramming boats, but you ram too many boats, and before long, you know, the hooks are going to come out or whatever.
No,
and,
I mean, I agree with you.
The hippies will try to stop it, but, like, you know, big boat will probably take care of it, I assume.
Yeah, I would say that, like, without question, if we as humans decided, hey, let's put an end to this, we would just start putting missiles on cruise liners and just start taking out orcas left and right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd I'm be letting you.
People from Ohio do it. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, and it would hit.
You want to run the fucking whale missile today?
Yeah.
$500. You can explode that whale.
Dude, just like those feral hogs in Texas where you hang out of the helicopter or whatever.
Exactly.
Dude, that would
treat
be...
them like that. They're like, look, we got to shoot them with rockets. They're a fucking nuisance. You guys heard what these things are doing?
Man, you know? I hadn't even considered all that.
Pigs are smart too.
Yeah.
You're sorry, so... I got something in my throat.
That's okay, buddy. My voice is completely gone from this weekend. I didn't realize how much screaming was in my new act, and I've just been kind of all day. But yeah, no, look, most big boats, I would say that I side with the whale in doing that. But yeah, you're right. I didn't even consider that like this will be a very, very small, short-lived victory for them.
Yeah, if that.
Yeah.
But go whale. You teed this up before we started by saying, like, you wanted to talk about this because of how we're always talking about what animals and how they can love or not and stuff. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well...
Well, you didn't get into all that.
No, I didn't, but I only said that because
when you said that, I was like, well, he don't think, like... Because I always made some exceptions, and I'm pretty sure whales were in the category of exceptions. Like, I know that some animals have, like, higher order abilities. I said I was like primates. I think I said whales.
But do you think whales, okay, you said whales could love?
Yeah, I think,
Well, then,
they can, like, talk. They sing love songs to each other.
Well, then never mind, because the argument that I was going to make, had you not, would be like, look, clearly this is not instinctual. This is learned behavior, and this is, they can clearly...
No, they're legit.
Okay, yeah, I agree that they're legit. And you know, to be fair, we haven't seen squirrels form a mutiny against car tires, you know, so...
Right.
So, yeah, I guess I'm back. You're right again.
Okay, sorry about that, everybody. I don't know what happened. It happened to me while me and Mark were doing a bonus episode of Weekly Skews too. I just, I don't know, got something in my throat.
I think mercury is
that in... what they call getting a frog in your throat, or is that a different thing?
I think a frog
in your throat.
Well, I've heard it said in several different iterations. Like, I've also heard it like when someone they're going to, like, let's say someone scares them, like they're about to talk and then they get scared. They're like, "Oh, you got a frog in your throat." So I was like, that lump, you know, like that, you know, the lump, like when you're nervous to say something, there's a lump. But then there's also like, I have like fucking phlegm in my throat. That might be a frog, you know.
Well, see that? That's what I have. I have sinus problems. I have drainage and stuff. And every now and then I'll get like, it's like the drainage just like hits my throat all wrong or something.
I think anytime your throat is wrong, it's a frog.
Right. It's like a tickling sensation in my throat that just makes me want to, like, you know, cough or clear it or whatever. And I can't talk through it, or that makes it worse. But I think I've got it.
Oh, I had something I wanted to ask you up top and I didn't.
Okay.
So, you know, people that know me know I'm pretty open. I'm like, you know, kind of low key depressed right now. We're making it through, but I'm sort of rekindling a little depressed right now. So naturally the thought occurs to me now, as it usually does when I'm depressed, but I never jump into it, but I'm like, I need to start baking bread. Right. You know, I think that's a pretty normal, I don't feel well, maybe this will help me. And
it absolutely is. I remember I told you, I didn't know that, but I told you this on the Well Read podcast when it happened, but like when COVID started, during the pandemic, that was when I found the Great British Baking Show, right? Which has become a seminal part of my life in the intervening years. But I found it at the beginning of COVID during lockdown and became obsessed. And in my mind, just from watching that show, and it's funny because it turned out like, I also didn't realize that people across the world were doing the same thing, i.e. getting into baking specifically during the lockdown. I didn't realize that. In my mind, it's just, I found this show, it made me want to bake. So I started baking, and I started like with bread, right? Made like a simple loaf, and it hit for me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get into baking bread. So I started looking up like things about baking bread online and reading into it and shit. And in doing so, I, of course, because I fucks with Reddit, I was like, is there a subreddit for baking bread? Of course there is. It's called Breadit, right?
Oh,
so
nice.
I found Breadit, right? And in finding Breadit, then I soon found out that amongst that culture of people, it is a known fact or generally accepted as such that getting into baking bread is a cry for help and generally means you are not doing well, because Breadit is a baking bread subreddit that also doubles as a like suicide hotline and depression treatment fucking subreddit. And I just thought that it was really funny to me when I realized that, because I had no idea, but it was like, you know, COVID lockdown. I mean, you know, I wasn't doing great, but I in no way did I put those two together until I started looking into it more. But yeah, apparently they go hand in hand. Being depressed and baking bread is just like this, apparently. Well,
I remember you talking about that now, but I only put it together myself because like baking bread and stuff has been something since we started this show that I was like, hey, you need to get into this, because Trey's already into it. And like, bake it, like especially French baking and stuff like that. I was like, that really goes with this show. You know,
I just want to make it clear. I would not say that I'm into French, like patisserie and shit.
No,
like that. Like
no, I'm, but you know, like you I'm do. Not, you've sent me shit. You fucking made the macarons.
Yeah, not the greatest. I've made a bunch.
That doesn't
of macarons.
Matter, dude. There's plenty of French
hard.
People that don't hit at it either. You know what I mean? Like you only see.
I'm just not good at making stuff pretty, basically. I can't make things like look good, and also like baking breads. I pretty immediately shifted from bread into like pastries and sweets and desserts and stuff like that.
I haven't made any kind of
loaf of bread in a long fucking time. I've actually been meaning to, because it's been a while. I've been wanting to make like a focaccia or something like that.
Yes. But, Well, and that's what I wanted.
I made a fire ass focaccia one time, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's part of what I wanted to ask you about is like me start, like, are there like, okay, if I'm going to start baking bread, what's my starter, you know, not like, no pun intended. I don't literally mean like a sourdough starter, but like, okay, what's good. Something? Yeah, I don't. Yeah, right. No, I mean like intro to bread, right? Because like I said, I've always wanted to do it because of this show. And then this week I was like, maybe I should start doing that. And then I go, oh wait, I'm really depressed. Oh fuck, this makes sense. You know what I mean? But like, so the thing that's always like, I think, and you can speak to this probably, the thing that's always sort of made me not get into it is because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, please do. And I think this is why you are into it and good at it. It's very mechanical, correct? Like
yeah.
It's,
yeah,
right.
Very much
so. We're both big fans of cooking, but I think the reason that I tend to cook way more than I would ever try to bake is because I have fucking ADD. And so I might make a mistake. But in cooking, I mean, there's some things obviously you can't salvage. That rarely ever happens to me. But like in cooking, if I fuck up a little bit, I'm like, okay, we'll just, you know, it's too salty. Dilute it with this, whatever. Oh, it needs more salt. Yeah. Do that. I can fix it. But with baking, I feel like I would get really, really frustrated. So did you come out? Okay, that's what I want to know. Did you come out the gate like, oh shit, I did this and it hit? Or was there like a huge trial and error period?
Oh, it's both, and it continues. I mean, yeah, they say, you know, the phrase is cooking is an art, baking's a science, or whatever,
right?
Because you gotta, because like the measurements are so important and everything, and it's like you get one thing. That's what I say about macarons, dude. I don't even know. I've made so many batches of macarons, and it's like I don't even know what. I got an oven thermometer because I was like, my oven must be too hot, but based on the thermometer, it's not. I didn't let them rest long enough. I didn't age the egg whites long enough. I didn't beat the egg whites to the right consistency. I didn't sift the almond flour properly or whatever. Like, there's just a million different things that you can fuck up. And if you fuck up any of them, it ain't going to be right. And
it's
like,
over.
And some people, macarons, though, I feel like are like, having baked a fair number of things, it's not like everything is like that. Macarons are like the bane of my existence, baking wise. Like they're on another level. But there's people out there that just don't ever fuck those things up. They're just like good at it. They just like got it. But I fuck things up all the time. My biggest early lesson that I learned, and you may already know this, like it might be common knowledge.
But
it wasn't to me when I started. Like, the way you like measure your flour is obviously super important. And like, if it said 2 cups of flour, I'd take my 1 cup measuring cup and like scoop out a cup of flour, right?
Of course.
And I'd level off the top, put it in there. Yeah. That's 1 cup. Then I'd do that again. You can't do it like that.
How? Why?
Because if you take the measuring cup and put it in the bag or your flour, whatever you keep your flour in, you put the measuring cup in there and like scoop it out, it's compacted, right? And so it's actually, you're actually getting way, way more than you mean to when you do that. So what you have to do is you have to hold the measuring cup, take a spoon.
Oh my God.
And scoop it out of the bag into the measuring cup, right? And then, but also what you really need to do, I mean, that depends. Like with certain things, yes, but like, not always. That I feel like that's kind of a remnant of when it used to be more necessary than it is now for a lot of things, but not always. But anyway, what you really need to do, which I will do sometimes if I'm making something like macarons, right, is you need to measure that shit. Like I have a kitchen scale, weigh it.
Right.
Like, because then you can't get it wrong.
Right.
And so because
so you go in there and you weigh your scoop, and then subtract that, right?
Well, if you're going to weigh it, I would use like a bowl or something. So you put the way those kitchen scales work, you put a bowl on it and then turn it on and it don't weigh the bowl. It just weighs what you put in the bowl.
Right.
And that way you can, America is the only country that uses like the cups and all that shit. All the rest of the countries, when they bake, they weigh it. It's like, 500 grams or whatever, and they weigh it all out. because it does have to be precise. But it's like,
well, no wonder they got the show and we didn't.
Right. But in macarons, as an example, like an American recipe might say, like, 4 egg whites, right? But fucking eggs are different sizes. And the whites are different sizes. So you don't really know how much egg whites that is versus like 300 grams of egg whites. Or, I'm grams dumb, right?
No, like me too.
So I don't even know how many. Maybe I just said an insane amount of egg whites. I don't know because I don't fuck with grams because I'm American. But I'm saying if a recipe says that and you weigh it out, it's going to be right.
Right.
If the recipe says 4 egg whites and you got 4 extra large eggs and they use 4 medium eggs or whatever, like that can fuck you up. Yeah, that shit.
Well, dude, like you've already changed the game for me. Right. Like I just have to get a scale.
You got to be precise. Yes.
Right.
Kitchen scale. And yeah, make sure you're not. Whereas like with sugar though, sugar, oftentimes the recipe, it should be compacted. Like,
right.
So you do scoop that out, like straight into the scoop. I mean, so it's just, I don't know.
Well,
precise and methodical for sure. But which I do like.
Cookies though seem to be different. And I say
my ass cookies, boy.
I know. And you've texted them to me and I really want to get into it. Cause I've noticed like there's like this scale they use where it's like, if you want your cookies, if you like this type of cookie, you use more flour, less egg. If you like this type of cookie, you use more egg. So I feel like cookies are like maybe the link between baking and cooking where I'm like, I could be kind of an artist in this.
Cause you can kind of fuck a cookie up a little bit and it'll still hit.
Yeah. It's like, this one's just crunchy. You know,
exactly. Or this one's crunchy, or this one's flatter, or chewier, or fatter, or whatever. Like it may not have been what you were like looking for exactly, but it'll, you know, will still hit.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of 3 pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So, like, you're talking about focaccia. Is that something I should start with? Or is that a really difficult bread? Because it looks hard.
It's not a really difficult bread. I would say that, like a brioche, shit like that, is more difficult. So focaccia's not so bad. It's also fun because it's got a shitload of oil in it, and you, like, poke it in there with your fingers and dig around and stuff.
And brioche is basically cake, right?
I mean, yeah, sort of. It's a heavily enriched French bread, so it's got a lot of, you know, fat and things that hit in it.
Well, I'm glad I brought it up because now I know, like, if I'm ever going to start this endeavor, at least save myself a couple headaches and get a fucking scale, because that would have infuriated me. Like, I would have just been wrong the whole time because I would have assumed, like, yeah, you get the cup and you fucking, you know, like, just do that. But thank you for that.
I remember the first few things about, like, bagels in particular, because I've got a KitchenAid and everything, and I would, like, I'd be trying to knead them and it would not come together. It was like way too tough and everything. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Because I'd watch the videos and recipes and stuff. And I was like, it ain't supposed to be like that. And it was because I was unknowingly putting way too much flour, or I'd say way too much, but like more than I meant to, which made a huge difference.
Which is all that matters.
I actually err on the side of lighter now for that reason. But
did you boil the bagels?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. See, I saw someone making it the other day, but I had my sound turned off, and I didn't know if like that was some sort of new hack or like. So that's the Polish way to do it: is you take them, you knot them, and then you boil them, and then you bake them.
Also, this is a personal preference thing, but like when it comes to yeast, there's 2 different kinds: active and instant. I think, and one of them, and I can't remember which is which. I think the instant you can just like mix it straight into the recipe. You don't have to proof it, but I don't like fucking with that kind because like if the OG kind is the active yeast where it's like you proof it first, which is like you put in a little cup of water or milk or something with a bit of sugar and then it blooms. Right. That's how you know that it's going to work. Right. I like to know that it's going to work because I've had stuff, yeasted recipes, right? Use instant yeast and stuff because yeast can be dead. Yeast is a living thing. If the yeast ain't going to work, the whole thing is fucked. Right. And so without that first step that shows you for sure my yeast is hitting, you know, it's a crapshoot for no reason, in my opinion. So I would use the active kind and always make sure that it's working first.
So yeast is like bacteria, like it's a dude, it's so fucking crazy how different bacteria be sometimes. You know what I mean? Because
bacteria be like that.
When I was a kid, if you'd have said to me, does bacteria ever hit? I would go, no, bacteria never hits. Bacteria is what makes me sick. But like the older I get and the more I'm trying to be into my gut health, it's like you need bacteria. And then like yeast is a bacteria and like certain mushrooms is like, this is a bacteria. And like, who the fuck were these people who were just like, let's take this goddamn bacteria and put it in this shit and that'll be awesome.
I think most of that stuff is all like mostly happened by accident. A lot of the bread is fucking ancient, dude.
Yeah, and no, like, it's like bread and beer, like the first two things that they ever did, right? And it was like
with beer with alcohol, I figure like some fruit was left to go bad and you know fermented or whatever, and people were like, oh, this is wild, but it hits though, and then they you know went from there.
But dude, the first person. You read the ingredients to make bread, and you're like, if I follow this shit, it'll work. If I don't follow this shit, it won't work. Somebody had to be the first motherfucker to get, this is it. You know what I mean? This is the way. And I just, that fucking blows my mind. But thank you for the tips.
Absolutely. So I've decided I know I said I was going to talk about some crazy bosses, but I think I'm going to wait because I know we got some air mails and stuff, and I don't want to get into talking about these guys and
go off the rails.
Yeah, I'll just wait till next week to talk about them, give people something to look forward to. But I have a couple of other tiny things. Found some more like rich people stories that I found and on Reddit, of course, and wanted to run a couple of them by you. Like this,
where do you find these on Reddit? Because I'm always looking at Reddit for stuff for this show and I don't know the ones to follow.
I actually the ones I brought up have been just ask Reddit threads that happen to do with rich people shit. You know what I mean? So it's just like kind of random basically. But if I see anything like that, obviously I make a note of it. But this guy said he knew a dude, an acquaintance who had a private jet. And said he, and I might have the numbers wrong, but that he traded in his 747 for a 737 because, quote, he didn't like the way the chandeliers shook on takeoff. Which I could say how that's annoying.
I mean, that would be annoying, you know?
Yeah, right.
But one of those annoyances that I would never think there was a solution to. I would just be like, yeah, we're taking off in a plane. The chandeliers are probably, they're probably going to shake. What the fuck is the difference? Like 747, obviously bigger than a 737, correct?
Right. So maybe it's just a little less, a little smoother or something. It wasn't about the different plane models. It was just the second one didn't have chandeliers on it or something. I don't know. I just know that that's like what the guy said.
It's a rough problem to have, man.
Speaking of Mark Zuckerberg earlier, he once, this was like a story at the time when it happened. You probably remember it. He like bought up his whole neighborhood of mansions.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So obviously he lived in a real wealthy neighborhood. He's in a massive mansion. The only other houses around, even remotely close, are also huge mansions. And he bought all of them so he wouldn't have any neighbors. Like he bought all of them and just left those empty. I don't know. He might have partied in them or whatever. Fucking put some coders in one or some shit. Who knows?
I was about to say like that would be clones cool
in the basement of one of them. Who the fuck knows with that guy? But like
definitely have one that's the party house. So it's like if we're having a get together, we go to the party house and then we fuck that up, and then tomorrow the cleaners can clean that up while I'm in my non-party house, you know? Right. Also, everyone has somewhere to sleep. You could have a party. If you fucking buy up, like, how many mansions was this? Do you know? Like, I think 10? It
was, no. I think it was like 4 or 5.
I think. But I mean,
so, you know, nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy. Just, yeah.
4 or 5 $8 million homes or whatever he bought up on a whim just so he wouldn't have to say hi to anybody when he gets the newspaper in the morning or whatnot.
But if you've got like, that's so crazy that, like, most people that are that rich are like, oh, I only want to live around rich people. But this motherfucker's so rich that he's like, none of these can even see me in a dream.
No, I don't even want fucking rich people around me. Yeah,
they're low class to him. Like,
I think he just, I mean, you know, he knew money and everything. I don't know that it's even about class. I think that, like, humans flexing. Just kind of, no, I think that humans just don't really hit for him. Do you know what I mean?
He's that way.
Like, I just think that all of humanity is kind of, he's like, no, thank you. None of that hits. I'll be in here with my projects or whatever.
If you had that much money, which with him, I mean, the number is infinite, the most money you can ever fucking think of. Are you buying, I'm not even talking about a practicality thing, but, like, are you buying a mansion in a neighborhood of mansions and then buying out the other mansions? Or are you going to go buy fucking 500 acres and have a super hitting mansion built on top of that so that you also have the land? Wouldn't that be what you would do? Because that's what I would do.
Feels way more practical, but I guess he just liked that neighborhood or something, but not, you know, but not it being a neighborhood.
Yeah, like, right.
I like this space in the world, but I'd really rather it not be a neighborhood. The whole neighborhood part of it is what's putting me off.
Dude, I bet the people that own those houses got, like, he probably ended up paying whatever they wanted for it. You know, if he was in that mood, there's no bartering there. It's like, no, I'm going to stay here unless you give me fucking this. So, like, good for those people.
So you said something a minute ago about you got one party house, and then while that party house is getting cleaned, you can party in another house or something. And it made me think of this ain't fancy at all. This is the opposite of fancy, I would argue. But it reminded me of something random I read once. I wonder if you heard of, and also give you the opportunity to poke any holes in it. So somebody theorizing, like, you know, that what a man should do is you should have two dishwashers, right?
Ooh.
In your kitchen. And so one of them is always clean and one of them's always dirty. Right.
Yeah.
So, like, one of them, you know, you got one that's clean, you pull the dishes out of that
and just use them.
Use them, put them back into the other one, right? Then when that fills up, you run it, and the process reverses, right? And you just go back and forth between dishwashers.
I mean, essentially, that is a fucking great idea. And if you can afford the other dishwasher, good on you. What I feel though would end up happening though is that I'd have two dirty dishwashers eventually.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things where, like, and this happens with me a lot, like. Me and Amber were just talking about it. For instance, she has those, like, the pumps, and so she's got the breast things that go on them. And there's, like, a lot of, I don't know how it was when y'all had kids, it was a lot longer ago, but, like, they're very intricate. There's, like, 8 pieces that make up one piece. You got to put them together like a fucking transformer. And so she's constantly having to clean them and shit like that. And she just got, there was, like, some glitch in our insurance where they're sending us some more of those. And she was like, oh, this is great. She's like, I can clean them at the same rate, but there will always be one clean. And then we and her both looked at each other and, like, no, they just gonna all be dirty. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, knowing that you have that other set, you're gonna go, well, I don't have to clean these right now. And then they're all gonna be dirty at once. Cause, like, if you've got the brain to want to not have to do something, you're probably not gonna do it. But I do like the dishwasher idea.
I'm just going to do a couple more of these. One of the co-founders of Microsoft had a mega yacht. Remember, we talked about mega yachts. And on the deck of his mega yacht, he had a basketball court, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember how some of those boats would poop out smaller boats?
Yeah, right? That's my favorite feature of those boats.
Yeah, right. So he had a basketball court on the deck, and every now and then the ball would go overboard, right?
Of course.
So he hired a dude to drive his pooped out faster boat behind his mega boat just to get the basketball out of the water when it went overboard or whatever. Like, that was that guy's whole job.
That's not a bad gig to have.
No.
Let me ask you this. How much do you know about the theory of relativity?
Not enough.
I
little bit, depends on where you're going with this. Cause I've tried to, of course, being me, I owned a copy of it in college and tried to like digest the whole thing, but I'm a little too dumb to understand the actual intricacies of it. But,
so is theoretical motion a part of that? Like that's a part of that, right?
Like theoretical motion.
So I know the theory of relativity has a lot to do with like time and light and shit. Correct.
Yeah.
Relative motion, excuse me, is like why when you're riding in a car, you're inside the car, you can throw a tennis ball up and it won't zip to the back because like you're confined in that space. But if you're on a yacht, like you're outdoors. So like the wind is whipping through your hair and shit. Like I feel like basketball would be a pretty fucking hard thing to do on a boat. Don't you think?
Well, I think they park those yachts a lot.
Right.
They just kind of chill on them, you know. I'm applying houseboat logic to non-trash things, but I think they drive it to somewhere that hits, then they just park and then hit there.
Okay, dude.
Wherever they're parked at. So.
That makes so much more sense. Like in my brain, they were cruising and playing basketball, and so the poop boat guy was more like dude at the driving range that is constantly picking up the balls and then he's having to drive them back and like throw them on. I thought that's how complicated that was, but the way you said it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Also, there was a couple that asked a travel agency to book a honeymoon. They used a travel agency because they stipulated that every hotel they stayed at over their 2-week journey had to install a new mattress that they would pay for. and then burn that mattress after they left, like no one else was allowed to sleep on their mattress, but they had a specific brand of mattress that they specified, and it was $5,000 a piece. So every place they went to bought and installed a $5,000 mattress for them to pork on and then threw it away after they left over the course of a 2 or 3 week trip or whatever. So that's load of money.
If you got it, you got it. And thus a further explanation as to how the mattress community, it still makes money is for fucking shit like that. Cause you know, we've talked about it a bunch. Like I did spend a lot of money for my mattress way too much. It was the first money I ever had in my whole life. So you're going to do stupid shit with it. But it got me to thinking of like, and I think about this with cologne too, which I think kind of fits the theme of our show. Thinking about it with cologne, like cologne is very expensive, right? It's very expensive for ultimately smelly liquid. But like I've had the same bottle of cologne for like 3 years and I use it every day. So I was like, they have to mark this shit up, right? Like, of course they have to, because if they $5 over 5 years ain't going to work. And I've thought that same thing with mattresses. And it's like, well, of course they, you know, they last you 10 years, so they got to mark it up. But like, I would say that like probably 1% of the world is like responsible for 99% of the mattress sales because of like hotels, rich people move. Like I guarantee when a rich person moves, they don't take their fucking mattress with them. They just get a new mattress. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. There's an old papaw saying that I heard once. It was something like never go cheap on anything that separates you from the ground. So it's like footwear, tires, mattresses, things of that nature.
Yeah, I agree with that because I have the money to spend on it. But yeah, you know, I certainly.
Well, it's also, some people just can't help it, but it's also like it undeniably makes objective sense because those types of things, if you get the cheap versions of those things, you're going to end up spending more money in the long haul. Now that's the whole economics of poverty and why it's inescapable and all that shit. We ain't got to get into all that. So
yeah, for sure. But yes, if you have the money to spend on good footwear, you're dumb to not do it. If you have the money, you're dumb to not do it.
So, I don't know. Let's do these airmail, I guess.
Oh, dude, I've got some really, really good ones. I've been debating on whether I wanted to end with this one or start with it, but I think I'm going to start with it. this is from our buddy John, and the subject line is, get ready for this, Texas redneck damn near beats me up for not being queer.
Okay.
Okay. I thought it was a typo. I genuinely thought it was a typo. And then I read it. First, some background. I'm a semi-retired programmer living with my wife in Tool, Texas, aka Trailer Park Boys with a Lake. I'm 56 and have lived in Texas most of my life, but I do like to read books and can say words with more than two syllables, which you would certainly agree means that I'm queer. So anyway, last Friday, I was out by the apartment pool with three of the local guys. I had just finished making a couple jars of homemade moonshine and brought out a few shots to share. Fast forward a couple of hours and we're all drunk and loud and laughing about whatever bullshit comes to mind. The rednecks all went to high school together and they started talking about dicks they had sucked, much like on y'all's show. We were all having a laugh until one of the rednecks wanted to hear my dick sucking stories, and I made the mistake of telling the truth. I never sucked a dick. This didn't sit well with the redneck with the longest beard and most tattoos. He started shouting that I was an asshole and a damn liar. He was definitely not going to let this queer who uses big words think he's the straightest guy here. So he was going to have to beat me up on general principle. Mind you, it never escalated beyond that. I'm a pretty big guy, and the other rednecks wanted him to shut up as much as I did. It was just a surreal experience that involved redneck dick sucking, and I figured if anyone could appreciate that, it would be you guys.
I mean, he nailed that last part. Yeah, for sure. This is certainly the show for it, but like...
What an outlier situation.
What? Yeah, like... he was with the... I'm not like... calling it into question or anything.
I'm happy for these guys.
Yeah, it's just like he's with a whole group of red asses who get drunk and longingly talk about all the dicks they sucked and then want to whoop your ass for not sucking any dick.
It's like,
I mean,
that's the world we want to live wild. In. Yeah. Yeah. Like that is such the inverse.
23, baby, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Oh my God. Subject line, white elephant stories. This is from Jennifer. Heard y'all talking about white elephant parties and wanted to share two stories. Read one, both, or neither of them. I don't give a shit, but they made me giggle.
<All right.
laughs> Which means I'm reading both. But they made me giggle just remembering them. Both of these stories occurred at the same friend's New Year's Eve party, but not the same year. Story number one, I should have known this was a trap. There was a fabric box shaped like a pink sparkly cupcake. I had to have it. Well, I got it. And by the way, here's a picture of it for everybody to see. That's a box that someone made to look like a pretty cupcake. And
They
did a very, very good job. The prize inside was a glass butt plug with a raccoon tail attached to it that some friends purchased from a Chinese website where it was labeled as a vaginal intercourse and anal sex weapon. The cupcake box in question made it back to my apartment, but not the, quote, weapon. I texted the hostess as well as the friend that brought this as a gift the next day. No one saw it. The only thing we can figure is that the friend of a friend that no one really knew that well and showed up with baby mama drama took it because he was really fascinated by how realistic that raccoon tail looked. He also threw up in the shower before peacing out because his other baby mama accused him of going to a lingerie party. We were all mixed company, just wearing sweatpants because none of us wanted to dress up. That's story number one. Story number two. I think this was 2017. We just moved into a new house. I was getting ready to leave to go to the same friend's New Year's Eve party. The hostess texted reminding us of the white elephant gifts. We were still unpacking and I completely forgot about the gift thing. It was like 8 at night. Everything was closed already, so I began scouring what we had unpacked to see if there was anything dumb that I could wrap real quick. Lo and behold, the Lord did provide a box of Red Lobster Cheddar Bay biscuit mix. Nice. A few hours later, the hostess was rather inebriated and wound up with my box of biscuit mix. She sat cross-legged on her floor, cradling her wine and getting the sniffles while saying that mix was the best gift she had ever gotten in her life. Thanks for the laughs, fellas. Love you, Jennifer.
I mean, you know,
Them Cheddar Bay biscuits unassailable, but
they are absolutely unassailable. thank you, Jennifer. The fucking the airmail is on fire this week. This is from Josh. This is very important. The subject line is poopé accents and the like. Poopé spelled P-O-O-P-E-H. Poopé.
Yeah, like Jamie. Like Jamie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yo, boys, was listening to y'all fawning over Jamie Tart and his accent, which I also absolutely love, and think whoever that British dude was who said it wasn't legit is full of shit. If you've never heard, there's a guy called Youngblood who's a musician over there, famously from Doncaster or Doncaster. Either way, I don't know. This is not them questioning it. That's me. Who sounds very much like Jamie Tart. A video interview is below for proof. Interestingly, there seems to be levels to the Doncaster accent based on what I can only assume is privilege. Jeremy Clarkson is from Doncaster as well, but went to a posh school growing up where Youngblood was a dirt poor bloke by all accounts. They sound super different. Jamie Tart was also super poor growing up, and I think that although it may be a bit exaggerated, it's very close to other poor Doncaster fellers. Just my thoughts while listening to y'all. Keep hitting Mr. H. So, yeah, there you go.
I don't know. You know, first of all, I don't know where Doncaster is, if that's outside of Manchester. We know from this week's episode that Jamie is supposed to be from Manchester specifically,
right?
Which they call Mancunian, a Mancunian accent. Again, I have no idea where Doncaster is. But if that dude is from Doncaster, if that's not Manchester, then the dude who, you know what I'm saying? There's still some gray area there. But if Doncaster is like a neighborhood of Manchester, then okay. Also, I saw some people say.
Well, they were saying
much.
That we were right.
I love that Jamie, talks. I love the way Poopé. He talks. Yeah, Poopé Keeley. Hey.
All right. Let's do one more. I had to check to see if this was certainly sent to Putting On Airs and not well read, but then I read the bottom of it and I know it was, but it's a great crossover. As I listened to y'all riff on Joe Diffie today, I was reminded of the greatest tweet of all time, or at least the greatest tweet about Joe Diffie. Behold in all its glory. And I'll read it to you, Trey. I don't know if you remember this. Okay. So Trace Atkins, when Joe Diffie died, shared a picture of Joe Diffie and said, "Oh my God, one of the all-time great vocalists, Joe Diffie was my friend. Rest in peace, buddy." And the top comment below was a older woman named Heather that said, "RIP Joe," and then continues, "Back in 87, he and I had a one-night stand. The cowboy was very well hung. Unfortunately, he never called me back. Heaven gained another 10 inches."
perfectly fits the legend of Joe Diffie.
It sure does.
That came up because I was saying my white elephant gift used to be pictures of Joe Diffie with lewd inscriptions on them or whatever.
Which does hit.
So that makes it hit harder knowing he had a
big old
clanger dick. Yeah.
He continues, "Also, I'd never heard of a Yankee swap before today's episode. We called it Chinese Christmas in my redneck Texas family, but it helped when solving today's New York Times crossword, 4 down, Christmas party game. Interesting timing. I saw y'all at the DC Improv a few years back and exchanged a sup with Corey in the bathroom. Thanks for all that you skew." Lucas. Thank you, Lucas. Airmail was absolutely on fire this week. I did notice a complete lack of limericks, and I don't know if that's because everybody got bored or if y'all's creative juices stopped flowing, but just remember, we are always accepting limericks and are willing to read them. Y'all do a bang-up job with that. We really appreciate y'all listening to the show. Follow us on all the socials and whatnot. You can get bonus stuff from me at parttimefunnyman.com. Get bonus stuff from Trey at patreon.com/TreyCrowder. And also, Trey, tell them about where you're about to be soon.
I don't really know, but you can go to TreyCrowder.com and I'm going, places to hit. Milwaukee, I think, is coming up soon.
Milwaukee, does it.
Yeah, go to TreyCrowder.com and check it out and come and see me. I'd appreciate it.
And also, stay fancy, motherfuckers.
Yep, skew.
Skew. Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.